Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, it's been obvious in the 2+ weeks since the midterm elections that President Obama is listening only to those people who didn't vote, all of whom exactly support his agenda. And so he's not going to pay much attention to those who did vote, which means frustrating things for Republicans in the lame duck, probably quite a few frustrating things for Republicans over the next 2 years. And as it turns out in our good martini, because you might have been wondering, well, what's good about that? Bad things for Hillary Clinton. She's going to be the Democratic standard bearer, probably, in 2016. And she is going to be on defense with her own party. She knows that what the president's doing is deeply unpopular. National Journal's Josh Krasauer has a long piece on this today, whether it's Keystone Pipeline, whether it's the Iran deal, whether it's amnesty unilaterally. She's somehow got to explain to the mainstream voter how she doesn't like what the president's doing, but somehow try and keep the core Democrats on board here. So have fun, Hillary.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really like the Krasauer piece. His column's title is Against the Grain, and he really is going against the grain of the Washington conventional wisdom, because the D.C. press corps loves to write the story of Republicans in disarray and internal fighting and all that kind of stuff, and really never seems all that interested in the fights within the Democratic Party, but they are set for some really big ones, because they have two leaders of their party. And really, by the way, one of the other observations somebody had made after election night was that the Democrats don't really have a party. They have a joint cult of personality between two figures. That after Obama and Hillary, who's the leader of the Democratic Party? Biden, Reid, Pelosi? You know, like, they have two people who really inspire very intense loyalty among them. And for the next 2 years, their interests are going to be diametrically opposed. Obama's playing for history, and Hillary wants to get 270 electoral votes. And those are not the same priorities. And on these issues that you mentioned, the immigration deal, this is not popular. The president is utterly convinced that this is popular, that everyone around him seems to think it's popular, but it's not popular to do it this way. It does not play well amongst blue-collar voters. It does not play well against African-Americans. This is not some, oh, we do this and we get Hispanic votes forever. The Iran deal, obviously there are not a ton of vehemently pro-Israel Democrats, but there are a couple who are going to look at this and say this is a particularly bad deal. And, you know, the question is, if they end up, you know, they sign this deal, and then at some point late in Obama's presidency, Iran says, oh, by the way, we have a nuke. You know, this will be remembered as one of the greatest failures of U.S. foreign policy in the last 50 years. Republicans are going to bring up this for vote, and there's, you know, it's going to be a very tough vote. He's going to say, are you going to vote with us and our interests and our allies, or are you going to vote with Iran? And it's very possible a lot of Democrats will abandon the president on that one. There's those two. Then there's Keystone, which we'll get to in another, in our next martini. Obama and Hillary are going to have effectively a civil war amongst the Democrats, and a good chunk of the party is going to line up with each side, and be interesting to see how well they patch over those differences as the election of 2016 approaches.
Now, Jim, every two-term president obviously wants his party to hold the White House, but it doesn't happen very often. The only time it happened in our lifetime was when Bush won after two terms of Reagan in 1988. So while Obama obviously has a plenty healthy ego, to put it politely, do you think he'd be that upset if Hillary didn't win?
No. That's the look, again, foreshadowing the next martini. He doesn't care if Mary Landrieu wins.
Touché.
He's not going all out to help Joe Biden, right? So, you know, Obama cares about himself and probably Michelle and the kids and probably Valerie Jarrett. And that's it. That's stop. At that point, everybody else can get thrown under the bus.
Wow. Not only is that an accurate statement, you've probably foreshadowed better than any other day we've ever had on the coming martini. So on to the bad martini now. And that happened yesterday on the Senate floor. Although as far as bad martinis go, the aftertaste on this one is pretty good. Once again, the Democrats have foiled something the American people clearly want, and that's the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. It's something that the House Republicans have tried to insert into many different pieces of legislation over the past few years, all for naught because the Democrats controlled the Senate. Well, lo and behold, now that Republicans are about to take over the Senate, and some Democrats anyway are trying to help Mary Landrieu in any way possible, Harry Reid finally allowed a vote on the Senate floor. Mary Landrieu ran around Washington the last several days in a frenzy trying to find the 60 votes necessary. She had all 45 Republicans. She found 14 Democrats. But yesterday, she couldn't find that 60th vote to get past the filibuster. So Democrats scuttled Mary Landrieu's attempts to show the people of Louisiana that she is competent and influential and vital for the interests of the state in Washington, D.C. So what may have been a slight bump for her if this had passed blows up in her face. But more importantly, the Obama administration and Democrats continue to try and kill our energy agenda at every possible turn.
Yeah, this is we're classifying this one as the bad martini. It technically is a bad, good, bad, good, bad martini. And to walk through it, the bad news is they couldn't find 60 votes, so they can't send the Keystone Pipeline legislation to the president's desk. The good news is this pretty much dooms Mary Landrieu, who was already looking pretty doomed already. The bad news is that it's not like we really needed this for Mary Landrieu, and it could have been a sense of a good sign of how quickly people could end up, that the midterm elections could have an impact. The good news is we will probably see Republicans in the Senate pass this, I'm going to guess, with about 63 votes in the next Congress. The bad news is President Obama is going to veto it next year, or at least it's certainly been an implied veto threat, meaning we're not getting the Keystone Pipeline until 2017. The good news is Obama will probably suffer a political consequence to vetoing the Keystone Pipeline. The bad news is he doesn't care. So that actually takes us to the bad, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad martini. I'll be drawing a chart on this later.
Yes.
It's kind of like a sine wave. It goes up and down.
We should point out the House version sponsored by Bill Cassidy passed quite easily.
Yeah, and there was a lot of people argued, look, how ironic is it that Mary Landrieu has to pass Cassidy's bill in order to save herself? I think that she needed something to talk about in these last couple of weeks, and if she had passed it, she could have been able to at least talk about this, and maybe blur the lines, and people have short memories, so they might actually believe she was tough against standing up to the Obama administration.
Yeah, it's fun.
Not so much now. Yeah,
yeah. Her big argument now is, well, who else could have gotten a vote on this?
Yeah.
Well,
starting in January, Bill Cassidy.
And his will pass.
Yeah.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And you mentioned Valerie Jarrett as one of the few people Obama probably truly cares about in this world. There's a story about her today that suggests, Valerie Jarrett actually saved the Obama campaign, and she was the only one who actually bothered through the Obama campaign back in 2007. To make a concerted effort to reach out to black voters. By the fall of 2007, even John Lewis, the civil rights legend, had endorsed Hillary. Nobody else seemed to be getting on board. Others who had gotten on board early were getting off. And Valerie Jarrett finally came on board to save the campaign. That's bad and crazy in and of itself. And then it talks about in this story about how basically she became the champion of identity wedge politics. Young people, black people, Latinos, women's and gays. So the divisiveness of this administration, not that it's only part of this administration when it comes to the Democrats, but she's kind of the one who spearheads that.
Yeah, I mean, here's what makes this fascinating. And I think most listeners are pretty familiar with the backstory, but let's walk through it real fast. Valerie Jarrett is the best friend of the Obamas. And as a result of that, she has access and influence and an ability to alter the thinking and the actions of the president that really nobody else in the entire country has. And so there are other people who are part of the inner circle of Obama from the beginning, Axelrod, Robert Gibbs, David Plouffe, all these guys. They're important and they work closely with the president, but they're hired staff. Valerie is family. There's always been a certain amount of tension there. Apparently Jarrett and Rahm Emanuel used to go at it like cats and dogs. When the midterms turned into such a disaster, you may recall that in Politico magazine, there was an article saying, look, Jarrett is ultimately the problem. She shields the president from criticism. She keeps him insulated. He doesn't know how things are really going. She always tells him he's right. And as a result of that, he walks around with this utterly false sense of how he's doing, of what people think of him, of all kinds of things. And certainly this theory would kind of explain a certain amount of how Obama can walk around utterly convinced he's doing fantastically when the evidence is so contrary, that she is kind of the filter of information to him. And as a result of it, he walks around just completely out of touch. Undoubtedly, you take a shot at the queen, she's going to shoot back. We knew at some point the pushback was going to begin. In this case, put together by a gentleman named Joshua Dubois, who clearly worked under her in the White House, writes a very glowing profile of how important she is in this. But what's fascinating, it's not just enough to say, she's terrific, she's doing a great job, and anybody who thinks she's the problem is crazy. No, no, no. He's got to go one step further and suggest that until she arrived, the Obama campaign didn't bother to pay attention to staffers who were young people, African-American, Latinos, and other minorities. Young, black, Latino women and gay staffers felt like they had a listening ear and an advocate in the upper tiers of the campaign, at times after making a quiet trip to Valerie's office. You know, she protected and elevated causes and voices, diverse voices, that would have otherwise never been heard. In short, this is playing the race card. And it's, what's interesting is it's playing the race card against everybody else who was around Obama before Jarrett showed up, meaning, you know, David Axelrod, Robert Gibbs, Devin Plouffe, Penny Pritzker, Jon Favreau, and apparently, implicitly, against the president himself. That until Barry Jarrett showed up, he wasn't listening to the young staffers and the gay staffers and the black staffers and the Hispanic staffers. Does he realize what he's writing? And now the next question, which I put up on Campaign Spot, is, okay, Axelrod, Gibbs, you know, Plouffe, Pritzker, Favreau, what do you guys think of this? Pass the popcorn. I think we could very well see an all-out knockdown, you're racist, no, you're racist fight amongst the highest levels of the Obama's, you know, top staffers. And man, couldn't happen to a nicer guy, could it, Craig?
Nah, I mean, that's pretty good bookends for today's martinis. Just complete and total infighting on multiple fronts for this administration as they head into the final 2 years here.
You wanted a team of rivals.
No drama Obama, right?
No drama Obama, that's right, that's right. You know, I'm just going to say, you know, for the next Republican president, when he assembles his cabinet and, you know, top White House staff and you know, key advisors, instead of a team of rivals, I have this crazy notion of putting together a team of teammates.
Tends to work better that
just
way.
Just give it a try, see what happens.
Oh, fun day. Jim, we'll do it again tomorrow. Talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.